Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Cafe Esoterica Radio. This is your hostess, Sean Margaret Cohen, and I'm back with my new podcast all about healing the heart called The Shape of My Heart. I want to explore the subject of unresolved emotions like fear, heartbreak, abandonment, childhood wounds, grief and loss, and any other subject that blocks healthy love. And I want to share my techniques, which I've used over many decades with myself, as well as my clients and students, to heal these issues once and for all. So pull up a cozy chair as the autumn leaves fall and the winter winds whip, and settle in. Why not pour yourself a nice cappuccino or herbal tea or perhaps some old wine and listen to stories taken from my own life's experiences as well as my many, many, many clients and students and your calls. We'd love to have your calls about heartbreak and how to heal it. I'm taking you deep within the heart of the matter every Thursday from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. UK time, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 11 a.m. to 12 noon Pacific Standard Time, and worldwide. Just find your time zone and dive in. You can share your stories of love, heartbreak, and loss too, and victory over adversity in our chat room as we go live on blogtalkradio.com, and also follow us on Stitcher, Podbean, TuneIn, and Spotify. And email the show, please do. We'd love to have your emails on theshapeofmyheart@seanmcohen.com. Call in the show, please. We'd love to have your calls on area code 516-387-1492. And we have our own private Facebook group. So if you want to do all the techniques and follow along with us, please go to Facebook and just put in the search, The Shape of My Heart, and we'd love to have you there. Let's get healed. Welcome to my new heartfelt podcast. I'm so pleased to be back and have you with me, called The Shape of My Heart. How's the shape of your heart? Let's find out together, shall we?
Hello, everyone. I have to be silent when the intro is playing on the Blog Talk Radio website, because that's where our home is. And here I am also on, if you want to watch me live on Instagram. So, Elena, how are you? Are you out there? And also on YouTube, of course. So if you go to YouTube and you put in Cafe Esoterica Radio, you will, in fact, see me there live, so you can chat in either room. I have to set my phone a bit low, but if I can find something to prop it up with, maybe I'll just do that before we get into anything. Let's see if this works better. Ooh. Okay, so let's hope all is well in the world. And, whoops, I lost the connection there for the long. Okay, sorry, gang. It's just, no, this is how it is. So if you are catching up with everything, that is going on with, there I am. Hold on. I'm just going, what's happening with Instagram? Hold on. Okay. Sorry, gang. I have to run three things at once. Okay, that's fine. If you're catching up with all the Shape of My Heart podcasts, right? And all of them are available on, you can find them anywhere there's podcasts. So if you go to Spotify, you'll find them under Cafe Esoterica Radio, The Shape of My Heart. If you go to blogtalkradio.com/Cafe Esoterica Radio, you will find them there. And you also see The Shape of My Heart. That's, it's Cafe Esoterica Radio presents The Shape of My Heart, because I'm still under that guise of my old radio show, okay? And what I'm trying to do to get people to tune into their emotions, to look at perhaps their past, where they may have been broken. We all have heartbreak in our lives, some more than others, you know, and some, you know, some would say that they that it affects their whole life, which of course it does, and it does affect relationships, and it affects relationships even with our children and their children. So it really behooves you to get well, do the therapy, do the inner work, do whatever it takes so that you are whole within yourself. You're not looking for another to heal you, to make you well, to make you better, to fix you. You can't fix another person. It doesn't work like that, okay? But what you can do is you can, you know, you can look within and work on what needs healed. Now, tonight is the perfect Thanksgiving for our American listeners and viewers. Tonight's Thanksgiving in America, or today, because I'm in London, and we're 5 hours ahead of the East Coast, and 8 hours ahead. It hasn't even happened yet in California. And, of course, I'm American, and I'm from there, and I have loads of family and friends there who are probably preparing for whatever they can under lockdown, Thanksgiving. But tonight, our show is all about perfect timing, dysfunctional families. And what happens when you grow up in a dysfunctional family, especially around the holidays? Oh my God. When you grow up in a dysfunctional family around the holidays, you have, you know, it's just a three-ring circus of madness, really. And I know because I come from a severely dysfunctional family, and I did all the therapy and inner work and 12-step programs and Gestalt and, you know, transactional analysis and humanistic psychology and Chuck Spinoza workshops, a psychology of vision. And, you know, I have a library of books here in my home that I've used. I've read for myself and for others. And of course, you know, I teach what I know, basically. So tonight we're going to work on, tonight here in London, wherever you are in your time zone, we're going to work on dysfunctional families. And what we can do to heal from them, because unfortunately, we most of us, and I'm saying most of us, will be coming from a dysfunctional family. I know that's really hard to believe, but let's define what a functional family is. A functional family and a dysfunctional family. And we're going to get into that right now. I'm just getting my notes out. So I hope you had an interesting week after last week's show. And if you want any pointers from last week's show, which is on sexual abuse, particularly children who, you know, grew up being sexually abused, I mean, that's horrible. That is the worst thing that could happen to a child other than someone maybe killing them. So very, very important that we heal these things, because we can unconsciously or consciously pass them on to our children, we can pass them on to our grandchildren. You know, we carry on two sides of our family, whether you're adopted, whether you're, you know, doesn't matter how you got here, but you will be carrying two generations at least, if not 24 generations, that's the latest, so that's 12 on each side of trauma. So think about what your grandparents went through. Think about what your children went through. I mean, sorry, your great-grandparents went through. If you can understand all the things that have happened to them, then you know, you can see clearly how it might peter into or feed into your own family life. But of course, most of us have no clue what happened to our great-grandparents or our even our grandparents. A lot of people in America are immigrants' children, like my parents. And they didn't really know that much. And sometimes the grandparents went over to America or wherever, and they decided, oh, well, I'm not going to talk about the old country and what happened to me because it was so traumatic. So even their own children may not know, you know, all the various things that hurt them and that you know, traumatized them. It's very important that we understand who we are in this conundrum of generational dysfunction, which is really what it is. So what happens in, sorry, is my phone going off? What happens in a dysfunctional family? Well, first of all, what is a dysfunctional family? A dysfunctional family is usually a family that has many kinds of dysfunctional families. Parents can be addicted to drugs or alcohol, or they suffer from a personality disorder, such as narcissism or OCD, you know. The problem with growing up in this kind of unhealthy environment is that children have to adopt roles in order to survive. Now, that is the worst thing, because they can never be who they really are. They cannot be their authentic self. So they become these little, I don't want to say robots, but they become whatever the family needs to survive. And this is where the true term dysfunctional, because it's not function, not becoming things they should be. They're becoming things they have to be. So the roles are called dysfunctional family roles. So, for instance, there are six main dysfunctional family roles. Now, what are they? I'm looking to my, you see me looking back and forth because I'm looking on my laptop and I'm looking on my Instagram on my phone. So I apologize for the head bobbing, but I have to do it, okay? So let's talk about, there are many roles, and not one of them is functional, okay? But unfortunately, this is how, you know, the family unit as a whole kind of survives, and it's not a healthy way. Let me just interrupt this by saying, if you want to call in with your dysfunctional family stories, I will be taking calls. I made the show a little bit longer tonight because I will definitely be taking calls. The area code is zero. You have to call America. Now, if you're in the UK or anywhere else in the world listening, you've got to get the code to America, which I think is 011. And then you call 516, that's Long Island, New York, 387-1492. And it comes straight to the Blog Talk Radio studios where I am. So, you know. Okay? And let me just say that again, 516-387-1492. You can chat in the chat room here. The chat room is open. I just type a little message, hi, so you know I'm in there. And also we're on the YouTube. The YouTube is right here, and I'll just say hi in the YouTube. So hi, we're on, we're live, it's happening. Here we are with the shape of my heart. Okay, so I've got three things going there. Now, let's talk about the six main dysfunctional family roles. So there's the caretaker. So the caretakers are exactly what their name suggests. They take care of the children in place of the parents. Despite the fact they are children themselves, which is very sad indeed, they are forced to grow up quickly because of the unhealthy environment. They are emotionally mature for their age, or forced to be, and have learned to act like an adult in order to survive. And this was my role in my family. I was the eldest daughter, and so I was the caretaker. The other siblings will naturally gravitate to the caretaker for safety, which mine did. I was 1 year older than my sister and 3 years older than my younger brother. And my older brother was 2 years older than me, but he was a massive problem. So I was trying to protect them from him. That's how it got done. The caretaker will feel responsible for the children and quite often take the blame for a situation where younger children might be punished. Well, I don't know about that, but I can honestly say when you are caretaking your own sibling, you have no childhood. There is no childhood. So the caretaker then evolves, and this is one of six roles, and these roles can inter-exchange as needed. So that means that if you are one thing as you're growing up, and let's say one of the children grows up and goes to college or university and leaves the house, then somebody else may take their role over. And that's really the dynamic. You know, it can change and does change. So the caretaker, I'm reading this, by the way. This is notes that I picked up from learning-mind.com, dysfunctional /family/roles, and this is written on the website, so you can check it out yourself. So the caretaker, the dysfunctional family role in later life, when they become adults themselves, caretakers find it very difficult to stop looking after their loved ones because they were often in charge and stepped in as the parent figure. They had no validation themselves from an adult figure. This means they're constantly looking for approval they didn't receive when they were children. Now, I was lucky because I did have some adult approval. I gravitated to my dear friends who became my second real family, and I was able to get what I needed a little more there, and that made all the difference. So if you're in a dysfunctional family and you have a friend who perhaps is a little bit more sane, their family's a little bit more sane than yours, you have the possibility there of having some help. And it makes all the difference. It's not the cure, okay, but it does help. Now, the second role is the hero. And the hero, this is what happened to we had a hero in our family and was my older brother. Then it changed to my younger brother. So, but she writes, the woman who wrote this, these are her words, but I can say they're seriously like my own. I think my baby brother may have taken on the dysfunctional family role of the hero, as he would always protest that nothing was wrong in our house. Even today, if I question him about my mother's behavior, he insists that nothing happened. My brother was the one in our family that went to university, got good grades, and has a pretty good job. Okay, so my older brother, that's not what he did, but he was the projected hero. My father wanted him to be the hero. And that's a different sort of vibe, you know? Typically, the hero of the dysfunctional family pretends that everything is fine and normal in the family. They want to project a good image to the outside world. However, because they are lying to others and, more importantly, to themselves, they cannot afford to let anyone get too close. This affects their personal relationships. So then she, the author of this, writes, for instance, my brother has never had a proper relationship with a woman or a guy. Heroes are usually the oldest member of the family. I wouldn't normally call my younger brother the hero, but the descriptors do fit him. Well, they fit my younger brother. He may acknowledge that there's things wrong, but he doesn't care. He's not interested in therapy. He doesn't, ever want to look within. It's sad, really. It's just complete denial, And then we have the next bit, that heroes, when they grow up, those that wear a mask to the outside world do not want others to see their true persona. They hide the traits they don't want others to see. So they never really are their authentic self. Narcissists do this as well. Subconsciously, they are ashamed of what they really are and where they came from. Putting on a grandiose display to divert people's attention from the horror of reality can also lead to denial in other areas which the hero can accept. So you have this facade, this falsity, this kind of, let's pretend, that's going on in the child's mind. I can't deal. I'm laughing because I remember Christmas was a particularly horrible time in our family. And the dysfunction was, my mother wasn't Jewish and my father was. We lived in a mostly Jewish neighborhood. And in the 50s and 60s and 70s when I was growing up, even inter-religion marriages were looked at as shocking, unheard. And so all my sort of Jewish girlfriends would come over and help us put up the Christmas tree, which was fine. They liked it. It was all good. But when my mother would buy my sister and I exactly the same gift with different colors. So, no matter what age I was, no matter how, I'm a year older, and I was far more mature than my sister. And so my younger sister never developed her own personality. She never knew who she really was. My mother just decided, you'll both get dolls, We'll both get some pajamas, the same, two different colors, you know, this kind of thing, which really was very strong soul. I wouldn't be here right now talking about this, but soul destroying stuff, you know. And if, for her argument, or being lazy and couldn't be bothered, I didn't want you to think that one of you was more special than the other. I hardly think that was going to happen anyway. But what she would do is she would give my young brother, he was the youngest, she would give him a pile of toys that was clearly a lot more than my sister. My older brother got another pile, right? And the definite message was the boys are more important than you and your sister, from both my mother and my father. So when you're favoring the sex of a child, that's dysfunctional, okay? When you're throwing two children in the same sort of, you know, box, extreme dysfunction. How can you look at two different children and say they're the same because they're both the same sex? They're not. I can remember my younger brother so spoiled by my mother because he was the golden boy. He was the hero, okay? And he just take all his toys, even as young as 5 years old, and just throw them against the wall. Just throw one after another. And I'd be like, what is he doing this for? Why? It was right out of Saturday Night Live, you know? And, of course, they hadn't invented Saturday Night Live then. And I just would sit back like, I'm not, this doesn't make sense. Okay, he gets all these things, and he clearly wants them, and yet he destroys them. And I think he was saying, and narcissism was clearly being formed then, it's not good enough. Think of Donald Trump pitching a fit. You know, it's not good enough. And that's how my brother is today. Grown up to be exactly like that. Grandiose narc, you know, and just like my father. And then we have the next role, which is the scapegoat. The scapegoat was first my sister. She was a year younger, and she couldn't stand up for herself. She was she was almost like the invisible child. That's another role. When I left and went on my own merry way, I became a scapegoat of the family. So they could talk about me behind my back, and I wasn't there to defend myself. I became the scapegoat. You understand? And the scapegoat is the opposite of the hero. The scapegoat of the family does not go along with the hero and pretend everything's all right. They do the exact opposite, which was me. I was always like, why don't you do something about this? I used to say to both parents, do you understand he's mentally ill? I used to talk about my older brother this way. And my father's like, no son of mine is ever going to therapy. You know, this kind of crazy mentality. So in this dynamic, this woman writes, my middle sister was the scapegoat in our family. Not only was she blamed for nearly every bad thing that happened at home, she received the worst punishment. How sad is that? My sister refused to play along and rebelled against my mother. This made my mother even mad. She would go out and punish her and try and break my sister. But my sister refused to let her see any kind of emotion. Well, my scapegoating was because I was psychic and they could make fun of me. And that was something apparently to make fun of instead of enjoy or nurture or think, wow, isn't that amazing? The scapegoat of the family will leave as soon as they can, which I did, this woman writes, which is true. Her sister, scapegoats are usually middle children. My sister is the third, so with fit. This is also true of my sister. Scapegoats are pretty emotional, stable, along with the caretaker. So I was more the caretaker. She was the scapegoat. She did not stand for herself. She never bucked any authority in the house whatsoever. If anything happened to her, she just let it happen. It was always me pushing in, you know, as the hero in a way to kind of help her, help my younger brother. Scapegoats are not good with emotional problems, but they are brilliant when it comes to coming up with practical solutions. Well, I am good with emotional problems. That's what I've been doing for the past 40 years. So you can these roles interchange, as I say. Now, the next one, the fourth one, is the clown. This was my younger brother, too. Very much the clown of the family, the baby of the family, always funny, making jokes, So she says in this article that this is her. Out of all the dysfunctional family roles, this is the one I can identify with the most. I have always used humor in my life, whether it's to make friends, diffuse an emotional trauma, which a lot of people even do that, or just get attention. Most of the reason I use humor is to get attention. And she writes, my mother ignored me growing up, so obviously I didn't get the attention and validation I needed from her. Getting a laugh from someone gives me that attention. Wow, okay. Clowns use humor to break up an increasingly volatile situation. As adults, they retain this method as they've learned it can work to shift attention from what is going on. As clowns are not great with responsibility, making someone laugh allows them to avoid serious tasks or duties. They won't be expected to contribute. Clowns are usually the younger members of the family. And as I said, my younger brother, you know, he would never do the dishes or the laundry. He wouldn't think twice to, you know, how dare you even ask him, you know, type thing. Or my older brother, but, you know, he could crack jokes and make you laugh and endear himself to you in that way. And to this day, he still does that. He's very funny. Him and my older cousin, they have a good relationship of some kind. And they do work together sometimes, or they did in the past. And they used to crack each other up. So she was also the clown in her family. Clowns, dysfunctional family role in later life. Here we go. Clowns are who hide behind humor typically hide depressive thoughts. You only have to look at famous comedians such as Robin Williams, Jim Carrey, Bill Hicks, Ellen DeGeneres, Owen Wilson, Sarah Silverman, and David Walliams. Famous for making us laugh, they all suffered from debilitating depression. Some also suffered from suicidal thoughts. Unfortunately, like Robin Williams, a few acted on them. So, you know, the clown in the family of the dysfunctional family system is not the healthy one. There is no healthy one. This is, it may appear this way, but it's not this way. Let's do the lost child. The lost child is a sibling we don't notice first. Well, fading is the background for safety. The lost child is a loner who never robs a boat and doesn't love. The way I would say it is that she tries to steal your personality. When you know who you are, you take everyone else. You dress like other people, you talk like other people, you act like other people, even though it's blatantly apparent that that's not who you are. And this is the lost child. The lost child doesn't know who they are. They don't have, you know, if you ask questions like, do you prefer chocolate or vanilla ice cream? They're like, I don't know. You know, they have no individuality. And this is what's wrong with them when their mother doesn't pay attention to them when they're little, or they don't get the nurturing in the first years of life that they need. And it's very sad because they grow up to be completely the same, you know. It says the lost child is a loner who never rocks the boat, doesn't cause a fuss, will never rebel. Instead, they blend in with the wallpaper and hope that people forget they are there. The lost child won't have an opinion of their own. They won't back one parent against another. You cannot rely on them to help you as they'll plead ignorance. They just want a quiet life with no drama. Obviously, it's pretty, although it's pretty obvious the dramas in their family, if they pretend it's going on, they don't have to worry about it. The lost child believes that if you don't talk about it, then you won't feel anything. And a lost child in the dysfunctional family role later on in life, the lost child will spend a lot of time on their own, they'll live alone, and they'll prefer a solitary pursuit. For example, they will enjoy surfing the internet, playing video games, and other activities where you don't need to get out. Living this reclusive life, it is possible that they will lose touch with other family members or have a relationship with certain family members. Now, it's very sad to think that your whole life could be spent like this. Well, I happen to know quite a few people who live like this. And, not just because they're in, hello, I'm waving to some of my Instagram people, hello. Not because they're in these family dynamics or it's locked down, but because this is wherever you are. It's tonight here in London. The final family unit has come about. We've named it so we can claim it. But it really came out in the 12-step system. And the 12 steps are Alcoholics Anonymous, which then branched out to Narcotics Anonymous if you're a drug addict. And then ACOA, Adult Children of Alcoholics. That's a branch of the ACOA meeting about dysfunctional family, because when you grow up in an alcoholic family or a drug addict or a cancer family or someone who's putting their addiction, whatever it is, then what you get is a dysfunctional family. That's how it works. You cannot put your addiction before your children and expect to have healthy children. You just can't. You cannot put the father, years ago, mother, father, now it could be mothers, people who are alcoholic. They stay at work and to work because not just for the mother. You know, when they came home, they couldn't function with their wife or their husband or their children. They just, I'd rather be at work. I get more joy at work. You know, come home. That's dysfunctional. And your money is more important than your partner and your children, there's something wrong with you. Okay? So I'm the truth teller in my family, thank God. One of us had to be. And I was labored with the most responsibility, even for my crazy older brother. And you know, I used to have to take the children to school when I was a child myself. I didn't even know how to get there. You know, my older brother would wake up at 6 o'clock. He could never tell the time, and he would take us to school. He'd say, come on, get up. I was too young to tell time, and I would hold my younger sister's hand and my younger brother's hand. I must have been brought. My younger brother was in kindergarten, and my sister would have been 6, and I would have been 7, and he would have been 9, 2 years older than me. And we would march through the streets, it'd still be dark out and perhaps not dressed appropriately, because do you know any 5-year-old or 6-year-old that knows how to dress appropriately for the weather? And we would go to school, and the teacher would see, can't drive in and see us all sitting on the steps of the school at 8 o'clock, and we had been out there for 2 hours. That's the kind of dysfunction I'm talking about. And you know, my mother got a phone call. And of course, she was up all night because either she was out, or she had been drinking, or she had taken some pills to mother's little helper, you know, whether she was taking the uppers to stay up or the downers to go to sleep. She just couldn't get up in the morning. She just couldn't do it. It was left to me and my older brother and my sister, but mostly me. And that's how I grew up. That didn't change until I was in my teens. So that was a hell of a childhood, not a happy experience. Some people might now understand why I live in London. And that's what the healthiest thing to do is to get out of a dysfunctional family. If you think you can heal it yourself, yeah, that's ridiculous. You can't. But what you can do is you can try and save yourself, basically. And that's what I did. Now, here we have the manipulator. That's number 6. The manipulator takes their experience of this hostile environment and uses it to their advantage. They capitalize on the family situation and play family members against, believe it or not. This individual will quickly become adept at recognizing what the actual problem the parent suffers from. Understand which one is the enabler, which one is the codependent. My father was definitely the rageaholic, workaholic, control freak, okay, and what it looks like on the outside, and don't ever talk about your feelings. And my mother was the alcoholic, manipulative, covert narc. Both were narcs. And he was grandiose and she was, covert. Now, why am I sharing this? You know why I'm sharing this? Because I can. I lived through that. I have the right to share that. Okay? That relationship that I had with my parents over many, many, many decades changed, evolved. Sometimes it got better, sometimes it got worse. But I can promise you, in all honesty, they never changed. No matter how my mother stopped drinking, she stopped doing all these prescription drugs, and I built a relationship with her. I built it, not she with me. I built it slowly through therapy, slowly through my own inner, learning about what all this was, and it took a long time. Over the years, she always affirmed that her brother was her favorite. I took her to therapy once, trying to get close to her. My therapist and I had a great first therapist when I was young. He said, well, you can bring your mother in if you want, and we can try and heal this relationship. And I brought my mother in, and the first thing he said to her, this is true, this is a true story. The first thing he said to her was, you're here with Sean, and she'd like to build a better relationship with you. And she said, yes, I'm aware of that. And, so he heard everything. Favorite. Now, people may think this is a normal thing to ask, but she's so clever, a therapist, and she answers my favorite. And to be saying that right in front of me, imagine how I felt. Just imagine. So my therapist just looked at me, and he got the whole story. That there was total disregard for feeling. Total disregard for the fact that I was highly sensitive as well. And I think if more and more people told the truth about their families, they'd be more healing and less anxious. And all my family are hiding behind their dysfunction, every single one of them. My older brother, they're all married with kids. God help their kids, I'm thinking. And none of them have done any real therapy. None of them have looked into their lives, but they're very quick to judge me, which I find amazing. But then that's the dysfunctional family role. So the manipulator exercises this knowledge to control and influence family members. They'll do it covertly, not directly. They never want to get caught. Gradually, they'll learn what triggers the parents and their siblings, and they will take shots at all of them. My mother was there, okay? But then we had extended family, like my mother's sister and her two children, that were kind of part of our family. There's a possibility that the manipulator will grow up into a sociopath or a psychopath. They will at least possess antisocial tendencies. So I would say that's my older brother. Manipulators can turn into bullies, which he was, those who harass people and get a kick out of it, which he did. They are unable to form healthy relationships. If they are in one, they will be controlling with a partner who has low self-esteem. So as you can see, this is a horrible way for any child to grow up. They will only think of themselves and what they can get out of others. They feel that the world owes them for their lousy childhood and will go about getting it by any means. Now, can you relate to any of these dysfunctional family roles? And the references here are from psychcentral.com and wikipedia.org. And this is written by Janie Davies, BA honors. And she is writing about her own experiences here. And if you'd like to read this yourself, I will put a link up to our Facebook group, which is called The Shape of My Heart. And you can find it there. You can print it out yourself or look into it. And please do, by all means. Now, we've got about 20 minutes left. Actually, we're going to go a little longer tonight. So I wanted to also talk about a couple things that will help. So first we create, you know, we talk about what it is and what the problem is and how, you know, it affects children. And children grow up, they never, look, you can't heal something if you don't do something to heal. It doesn't just get better on its own. So if you come from a dysfunctional family, you really need to do the inner work, which is therapy, which is going to like a 12-step program and understanding 12-step programs are mostly free. You know, they're mostly donation only, a dollar, a pound. And they're a good place to start. There are many, many, many good therapists who deal with this issue. They're aware of it. And you want a family therapist. That's what you really want. I mean, any therapist usually knows about it. And you can also choose a constellation therapist. A constellation therapist is a constellation, it is a type of therapy, where you create the family in a room. So you get four or five different members, say you do a group therapy thing, and someone pretends to be your father, someone pretends to be your mother, et cetera, et cetera. And you just allow them to just say what comes to them to say. A lot of powerful stuff goes on in those rooms. So a constellation therapist is also very, very healing and working with family issues. 8 rules of dysfunctional family. Here they are. Control. You must be in control of feelings, behavior, and relationships. Perfectionism. Be right about everything. Blame. Blame yourself or someone else. Never, ever, ever take the fall. Denial of the 5 freedoms. Deny feelings, thoughts, perceptions, wants, and imaginings. No talk rule. Don't talk honestly. Mythmaking. Look on the bright side. There isn't a problem. You know? Incompletion. Stay upset and confused with resolving differences. And unreliability. Don't trust anyone and you will not be disappointed. And this comes from spiritual journey of healing and calm. And those are the 8 rules of dysfunctional families. So if you look into your own family and you think, well, that's interesting because that goes on in my family. No? And for everyone sitting in a big turkey dinner right now in America, they're probably near this, probably point out who's who, you know? The talk rule, I mean, the crazy making, and this is what dysfunctional families do best. They are crazy making, soul destroying rules. You know, if you can't talk about anything, how can you heal it? If you don't acknowledge feelings about stuff, like my mother used to say to me, you're so sensitive, you know, like as if it was a crime to be sensitive. If I was crying about something and I cried a lot growing up, I would feel, I didn't understand I was an empath. I didn't understand what these things were. Nobody did back then. And, you know, I would lock myself in my room. That was the only way I could cope with that house. You know, that was the only way I could cope with anything going on there, was just to stay away from them as much as possible. And I slept out at my girlfriend's house a lot, you know, and they were my godsend, all my girlfriends, every last one of them. I was lucky I had some good, close female friends, and they kind of understood. They saw for themselves what was going on, and their mothers would take me in and say, "Are you okay? What's happened?" And you know, I was very, very lucky that I had that. As I said, if you are a child in a dysfunctional family, I don't know if you'd be listening to this. It's very difficult to get help. When you're young, there's no one to talk to. You can't really go anywhere. Maybe a school counselor. But if you have friends whose families are healthier, then at least you have a little bit of a chance to see what it's like to have a healthy, you know, emotionally healthy mother and father. You know, to see your parents kiss, to see your parents hold hands, to hear them say that they love you and they love their children. I never saw any of that growing up. Not once. I never saw it once. Believe that? And the words "I love you" never crossed my parents' lips until I did the therapy. And my therapist said to me, and I quote, "Go and tell them yourself." that you love them. All children love their parents. Even the ones that abuse them, they still love their parents. It's in the DNA. They can't help it. And I said, I'm not going to tell my mother that. She's never said that to me. Well, maybe if you say it first, she'll say it back. And I'll never forget the day I said it to her. I was 19 years old. And I said to her, Ma, I love you. And she turned and her whole face broke, you know, like that veneer of sternness dropped. And she said to me, I love you too. And I was shocked. Oh, my God, she said it back. Did she mean it? And that's how I began to build a relationship with her. And I sent a lot of books on things like the therapy I was doing, as well as ended up going to, you know, God bless her, she started going to therapy. She started doing some inner work, started trying to work. I think she realized, oh, my God, what am I doing, you know? I can't say the same for my father, but I can say towards the end of his life, he did admit to me personally, I'm really sorry for the way I treated you, and I'm really sorry for the way you were right about a lot of things, and I didn't want to hear it. I don't know if that's conversation, but at least I got that. So going through the dysfunctional family is never easy for anyone, and but there is hope. So as I said, many 12-step programs deal with this. And adult children of alcoholics or ACOA, they hold meetings online as well as in person daily. And all you have to do is Google them. You can Google 12 steps. You can Google A if you feel your problem. A lot of children who grow up in dysfunctional families with addiction also become addicts, which is another way of coping, you know. So if your mother was an alcoholic, you have a one and two, basically one or two. You're either going to be an alcoholic or you're going to not be an alcoholic. For me, I'm very lucky. I got the not alcoholic deal. Even though I worked in bars and restaurants for 10 years and was a bartender as well as a waitress. Thank God that didn't happen to me. But, you know, mine is food. So you can be a food alcoholic. You can be a drug addict. You can be a gambler. You can be a shopaholic, you know. These addictions are all so you don't have to feel. That's what addiction is. It's like you don't have to feel the pain. You don't even know what the pain is anymore. They're so numb. And it's very sad, you know. It's very sad to spend your whole life repressing pain. So I urge people to go to these 12-step programs. The new year is coming. Start a new year. Work with a good therapist to heal whatever happened in your childhood, you know, and get well. That's the most important thing. Get well. So I have here, keep a journal of your memories and allow each one as they come up to heal. Talk it through with your own inner child. Tell it how brave it was to cope with so much. Now that you are the adult and you promise to keep it safe. If you remember from the first episode, we talked about the wounded child, the child within. When you are holding that inner child's hand, metaphorically, okay, in your mind, and you go within and you talk to that child, you say, I know you were hurt. I remember everything, you know. I just want you to know I'm here for you. I'll never hurt you again. You know, I will make sure that nobody hurts you. And I promise you that, you know, I will create a safe space for you. You know, I had a friend whose parents, again, trying to build their business, probably not bad parents, but this girl moved 16 times in 10 years. 16 times in 10 years. So as she was growing up, she never knew. Like she stayed in, you know, she'd go to school and 3 months later they moved to another school and 10 months later they moved to another school. And, you know, so in her adult life, she never had any stability. She could not create stable relationships and she could not create a stable home. You know, last we spoke, she was renting a room in someone's house. house, and she's 60-some years old. You know, she had a flat, she sold it. She could not, when you don't create stability for your children, they don't know how to create it for themselves, is what I'm saying. So, you know, being a parent is the least educated job in the world. Nobody sits you down and says, do you know how to be a parent? Do you have any idea what you're doing? Do you realize how badly it could affect this child's life and the children, two generations, three generations, 10 generations ahead? Or are you going to sit there and pretend it's not happening and you just do what the hell you want and who cares how it affects your children? See, that's really horrible if you're that type of parent. And I know plenty of people, they're not my clients, because I have good clients come to me because they're conscious people and they want to do well in their lives and they want to make sure their children are okay. And this is, you know, I'm very blessed that I have people come to me who are sane and happy and you know, they've maybe had upbringing issues like me, but they worked on them, you know. So we don't want to abuse ourselves. We don't want to abuse our children. We don't want to abuse anyone else if we've been abused, you know, and that's the 50. So the 50-50 is my older brother was getting abused a lot by my parents, and he turned around and he would abuse me and my siblings. And when you're a child, you don't understand this. You don't understand why does he feel the need to, you know, to beat us up or chase my younger brother with a knife, you know, or all these crazy, insane things. And we couldn't see the abuse, but it was clearly happening. We didn't see what my mother or father did to him. We only saw that there was a kind of, you know, payoff. So the payoff was my father constantly putting him on a pedestal. Yet who knows what he was doing behind closed doors to him. And this is what I mean about, you know, you must basically leave the dysfunctional family. You must leave. If you want sanity, you must leave. So you leave abuse behind. If your own dysfunctional family is still being abusive, whether physically, verbally, or you feel unsafe in their presence, it is time to let go and get a healthier family with friends or within the ACOA community, or as I did, lots of therapy, lots of inner works, read all the books, did the 12 steps for ACOA, and, you know, try to connect with people who are emotionally healthier. It's not always easy. I do, because of my status as a person who grew up like this, you know, I have an unconscious radar that can attract, and this is what's really difficult. Empaths can attract narcissists. And this is something about the empath is so highly sensitive and the narc is so dead inside. They have no feelings, you know. So there's somehow the law of opposites. You know, the law of opposites goes into play. So I have to really, really watch who is, you know, I've cut a lot of people out of my life in the last 10 years. And I did it because, of course, as my daughter was growing up and getting older, I began to see more and more things. Especially, I wanted her to have everything I didn't have. I wanted her to have dinner on the table at 6 every night. I wanted her to have, I mean, we never knew when we were going to get dinner, you know, if at all. I wanted to get up every morning and take her to school, and I did. I wanted to pick her up every day after school and make sure I was there on time, which I did. I wanted to give her lovely presents for her Christmas or for her birthday, but also to teach her that it's important to be a good person, not just a spoiled brat, you know, who gets everything they want, but a good person. So when you create a family of your own, you want to have not the dysfunctional family. You want to have a healthy family. And having a healthy family doesn't just happen. It's just some miracle, you know. It happens because you've either done the work, right, or you chose wisely, you know, but you have to know what you're choosing. I'm going to just give us a couple of minutes here because we're already up to the top of the hour. I can't believe it. 5 minutes before the top of the hour. I want to just say some great books that are Healing the Shame That Binds You, which is an excellent book because a lot of dysfunctional family has to deal with shame. And when we talk about shame, well, what kind of shame? What do you mean by shame? I was very vocal and very honest about what I experienced in my childhood. And, you know, but somebody else might think that's so shameful. How dare you talk about that? Or that, you know, you were ashamed of yourself because you went through that. Well, I would say to that person, thank God I was able to talk about it, because I would have cancer. It would be eating up alive if I didn't talk about it. You know, we wonder why I'm very much a proponent. You know, everything I've ever done in my adult life is about the mind, body, and spirit, and how we're all connected. We are all connected. And our mind is what creates everything that's going on in our world. So spirit, mind, body, okay? And I think it's very, you know, important that we understand this connection. When we don't understand this connection, that's when the shit hits the fan, really. That's when people get sick, or people have terrible relationships, or they don't understand why they got fired, or they don't understand why all of a sudden, you know, their friends don't want to talk to them. You know, whatever the story is, you can make it up as you go along there. But my speaker, Casey, who I really love learning from his work when I was in my 20s and 30s, Casey was a very well-known psychic in 1920 to 1945. He died. 1945, there's a beautiful place in the Association for Research in Washington. Casey could pretty much see into this way. He always said, he was a very spiritual man, and he channeled spirit, and he would say that spirit is the inspiration, mind is the builder, and the physical is the result. And that's true. What we create, our spiritual connection, it filters into the brain, into the mind, and mind is not just in the brain, but we know that the mind and heart have their own auras and energies all around our bodies, you know, and they each other. When you send love to them, you're literally sending energy to the person. So if you send love, they feel it. If you send thought, they hear it, depending on conscious they are. If you're conscious and you're tuned in and you develop yourself a bit, you will hear it more and more. Believe me. We're all empathetic. We all have these abilities if we don't repress them. But I think John Bradshaw is wonderful for any of his books. He's done another, The Family. I mentioned him before in the show. He's passed now, but he was his story is amazing, what he lived through and how he came to write these books. There's another great book, Adult Children, Secrets of Dysfunctional Families by John Friel and Linda Friel. And then another, Healing the Child Within. I have this book, Discovery and Recovery for Adult Children of Dysfunctional Families by Charles Whitfield. And here's another one, Surviving the Toxic Family. Taking yourself out of the equation and taking your life back from your dysfunctional family. And this is what I did. I took myself out of my dysfunctional family, and basically I never really went back. I mean, I had to go back, you know. Even I went back for my mother's funeral, and, you know, my brother pulled a good one on me. So, you know, it was a horrible experience to be there, really. My daughter, I'm probably never going back here again, just so you know. And so, you know, I know that you feel these are your family, and, you know, you're an only child, want to have connections to your cousins. And I understand that. But for me, I will never see these people again. And she said, okay, I understand. And if you feel at any point that they treat me badly or say bad things behind my back, or in any way, shape, or form, try to manipulate you or undercut you or in anything like this, you need to walk away. And you'll create your own family. possible, you know. A lot of people think family is the be-all and end-all. In my experience, it was the worst experience of my life, having the family I have. But one thing that it did teach me, and I will say this, is any time I counseled another human being, and I ended up becoming, through tarot, astrology, and even, you know, nursing and all the different psychology, all the different things I know and trained in, you know, it's all counseling, all of it on some level. And it made me see all the different madnesses that could go on, you know? And if my mother used to tell me all her problems at 13 years old. She'd sit me down in the kitchen, 13 years old, and she'd just pour her heart out to me. And, you know, that's abusing children. You don't do that to children. Children need safety. They don't need to be told your problem, you know? So again, I learned how to be a counselor. I learned how to listen. I learned how to help people. And if that's what it took, I would say that probably, you know, if we choose our family, you know, if I chose them just to get here, I don't know, maybe I overstretched myself. But the moral of the story is I wouldn't do that again. Never. So to thank everyone who came along to listen today. Dysfunctional families, it's no way to grow up, but if you did grow up in a dysfunctional family and you want some help, I am a therapist, I am a counselor, I am running a 50% off Black Friday. So let me give you a shameless plug here. You can check my website, which is tarotbyseancohen.weebly.com. You can email me at the shape of my heart by Sean M. Cohen at gmail.com or tarotbyseancohen@gmail.com. Cafe Esoterica at gmail.com too. We have that one as well. And get 50% off all my services up until December 15th. So that's starting now for the Thanksgiving holiday. And that will take into the new year. The end of the year. And I want to, you know, kind of give people some help. So if you want to do some counseling, you want to have a tarot reading, because in the tarot, I look at all these things, you know. I also bring messages from Spirit, which is a wonderful gift to give to anyone for Christmas, Hanukkah, or any, you know, if you want to give it as a gift, you can. People love to have those kind of readings because they really mean so much and they're so personal and unique. And I can just say that, you know, I wish everyone a happy and safe holiday, and we'll see you here next week. Next week, we're going to tackle how suffering imprisons us and how it awakens us. So healing from suffering next week. There's one other thing I might add, which is this is the ACOA laundry list. I think we the people on Instagram, because it looks to me like it's frozen. I don't know. It says it's live, but I don't know. Let's just check on the old. Yeah, okay. So what we're going to do here, I don't know if this is happening, but it says ACOA laundry list, the aftermath of an abandoning and abusive childhood. A, addictive compulsive behaviors or marry addicts. D, delusional thinking and denial about family of origin. U, that's taking adult children of alcoholics, right? U, unmerciful judgmental of self and others. L, lacking good boundaries, want to symbiose. We want to get close to someone, like, you know, almost like too close, you know, suck them up live, you know. T, tolerate inappropriate behavior. C, constantly seek approval or overly independent. H, have difficulty with intimate relationships. Incur guilt when standing up for self. L, lie when it would be just as easy to tell the truth. D, disabled will, can't be one's own motivator. R, reactive rather than active or creative. E, extremely loyal, but to the wrong people, which is bad, huh? N, numbed out from too much pain. O, overreact to changes out of one's control. F, feel different than everyone else. A, anxious and hypervigilance. L, low self-worth because of internalized shame. T, confused love with pity. O, overly rigid and serious, or just the opposite. H, have difficulty finishing projects. O, overly dependent and terrified of abandonment. L, live life as a victim or as an offender. I, intimidated by anger and criticism or in a rage. C, control madness and excessive need to control. And S, super responsible or super irresponsible. And that's from The Family by John Bradshaw. See? So it's ACOA laundry list. I would definitely, you could Google that. But come into our Facebook group, and it'll be up there. I'm going to put everything up there now. And also, I'd like to thank the woman who wrote this lovely piece here that I used tonight to help. And I know I said her name, but I'm going to say it again. It's Janie Davis, BA Honors. And you can find all this on www.learning-mind.com/functional-family-roles. I think that's it for tonight. If you are having a wonderful Thanksgiving, I'm very happy for you. But if you're not, come into our Facebook group called The Shape of My Heart. And we're healing hearts and minds as much as humanly possible in the short time we have. I think my Facebook Live is, my Instagram Live is dead here. I don't know what happened, but there you go. And I would like to see you again next week. I'm going to leave you with a beautiful song by Kelly Clarkson called Because of You, which really makes sense if you know the words. And let's get well. Let's get healed. Let's get emotionally well. And then we can create happier, emotionally balanced and whole lives. And that's just so important for us, our children, for our grandchildren. I'm going to take us out with Kelly Clarkson, Because of You. We'll see you next week. Here we go.
Because of you, I never stay too far from the sidewalk. Because of you.
Well, she sang that beautifully, Kelly Clarkson, and that is the truth. That's because of you. If you, you know, people say, oh, you shouldn't blame your parents for all your problems. But you're right. You shouldn't blame your parents for all your problems. But when you're an innocent child, and the child has to become the parent or some other role that's inauthentic and isn't real and plays that out and doesn't even realize they're playing it out, or, you know, gets some attention by playing it out, you know, as opposed to no attention, what do you think the child's going to do? The child's going to go for whatever gives them any kind of attention. And it's very sad. You know, I'm a big believer in things like parents should take parenting classes. They should understand their roles and how they affect their children. They should clean up their addictions before they ever even think about bringing a child into the house. And if they can't, then they shouldn't be parents. I mean, it's that simple. If you can't take care of a child properly and you don't want to get well, then, you know, why would you want to have a child and bring it into that kind of environment? So I'm, you know, that's just my personal opinion. I'm sure many people think, oh, well, it doesn't matter. The child will fend for itself. There's no child on this world who can fend for themselves. They can't. Okay, they're not capable. So with that, I will love you and leave you and send you all good feelings and good blessings for a happy, healthy Thanksgiving to my American listeners. The rest of the world, have a good evening, good day, wherever you are, and we'll see you hopefully next week. Take care now. All the best. I'm just going to close Blog Talk Radio here. And goodbye.